KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
But we are now joined. I'm 100% sure we have Don Goley from Humboldt State University on the phone. Don Goley, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, and you?
Sorry to hang up on you at least three times.
Okay.
Eh, who among us cannot relate to accidentally hanging up on somebody when you're trying to conference a call? Or call waiting. But either way, so Professor Goley, you are with the biology department at Humboldt State, and you have been with the whale almost daily since June. Is that correct?
Yeah. My students and I have been monitoring her behavior and health since she and her calf arrived in late June, and then her calf left about 3 weeks ago, and so we've been monitoring her from a number of shore sites ever since.
And what is the status of the calf right now? Has the calf been spotted?
The calf left the river and was seen just offshore by students and NIMS officials, and we haven't seen the calf since, but we're taking that as a good thing.
I had seen some comments that some folks down in, like, Requa had seen the calf with other whales, so who knows?
Okay, that'd be great.
It would be great, and it was time for the calf to go, right?
It was. It was definitely the time that they would wean in the wild, and she started showing behavior that that started sort of making longer moves away from the mom, which is totally typical behavior of weaning in the wild. So we're encouraged that that the calf most likely made it and is swimming somewhere in the Pacific right now.
Well, as somebody who spent a lot of time there, and I was up there on the bridge looking down a couple of times, and there were, you know, dozens of people. I mean, we can safely say that hundreds of folks went to watch this whale and her calf, and then just the whale, if not thousands, right? I mean, you were down on the water. Can we say thousands of people saw this thing happen?
I would say definitely thousands of people. Yeah.
And so I guess some of the obvious questions are, I mean, just now that she has passed away, what happens to the body? What's the status?
Well, right now she's buried, and she's buried on Yurok land. And then, if they decide that they would like to articulate the skeleton, then Humboldt State would be happy to help them with that. But it's in their court right now.
Is anything being done with the carcass?
No, it's just buried, and we were able to work with the Marine Mammal Center in Sausalito and North Coast Marine Mammal Center to acquire a number of samples so that we can potentially have the ability to assess why she died.
And when would those results come back?
Those take a while. They're sent to a number of different labs throughout the country, and so to get it'll be weeks before we get that information back.
What's your hunch?
I don't really have a hunch. I'm actually kind of confused about it right now. She, you know, her skin looked really atypical of an animal that's been in the ocean, and so it looked really rough. So her skin was really different, and that was a huge difference between animals that have been in the ocean versus in the river. Her stomach didn't have any prey in it, but her blubber layer was relatively thick. So, you know, it's kind of hard to put all those pieces together, and when we get the information back from the, you know, detailed examination of the tissues, I think we'll have a much better idea.
So there wasn't very much in her stomach. What was in there, if anything?
No, not very much. Just goop.
The Time Standard was saying that she had been eating, like, invasive clams. Is there any confirmation of that?
You know, that was our idea. As you may have seen from the bridge, there were times when she would roll over and mud would come from her mouth, and that's the typical way that whales feed in the wild, that gray whales feed in the wild. They eat invertebrates that are in the mud, as well as other things. But so we were encouraged, and we did some prey sampling there, and the only prey that was there were these invasive clams and some snails. And so we were speculating that might be what she was feeding, even though it's unusual. But then again, the whale in the river is pretty unusual, too. So I was interested to see if there were any remnants of that in her stomach, but there weren't.
How common is it for whales to go up rivers?
It's not very common. It's not. I think in the last 20 years or so, there's been four in California that we've tracked. And this is the first gray whale that we've really spent much time tracking in rivers in California.
And how much time could she have stayed in the river? I mean, I guess maybe we know now exactly how much time she could have stayed in the river, but is there like a real hard ceiling as to how long a whale can be in freshwater?
You know, there's not, but that's one of the things that we've been able to learn from her, or potentially learn from her, that we're able to monitor her health throughout and get an idea over the long term how her behavior and appearance and physiology changed. And so maybe with the results of these tests, we'll have a better idea about what her physiological limits were.
Now, this is a whale that had been cataloged and photographed before. I read a report from a marine biologist up in Seattle who's like, oh, yeah, I've totally seen that whale. And, you know, you can tell by the markings who's who. What else do we know about this whale's backstory?
We don't know a lot about her. Again, we contribute to a large photo catalog that for all the gray whales in the Pacific Northwest. And this whale was seen in Kodiak. It was seen Kodiak, Alaska. It was seen in Vancouver and northern Washington historically. And so she was a large whale. She's 43 feet. And so she was an adult, and she was established. She'd had a number of calves. But this is the first time that we've really seen her in Northern California, and unfortunately, the last time.
Do we know how old she was?
No, it's hard to age a baleen whale. They don't have teeth that you can section and count the rings on, and there's really no physical part that you can really get the age from.
Well, you know, she had been photographed in, as you said, Alaska and Vancouver. How far back do those photographs go?
I think it was in 2005 was her first time to appear in the catalog. But that obviously she was an adult at that time, too. So
she's at least six.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you want to take a guess as to how old a whale of that size might be?
No.
What? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out a little bit more. I mean, are they 20? Yeah. Are they 80? What's the ballpark?
You know, the crazy thing is that we used to think that, you know, the standard thing was that big whales, you know, 50, 60 years was kind of the estimate. But, you know, there was a bowhead that was found a few years ago now that was determined to be over 200 years old. There were artifacts that were found in her blubber that they could date the artifacts, even though they couldn't date the whale. And so they use that in connection with molecular techniques, and that's the age they came up with. So that's why I'm reluctant to say how old she is, because I could be orders of magnitude off.
Now I completely get where you're coming from on that. Again, we're talking to Dawn Goley from Humboldt State's biology department. She was with the whale practically every day since June, and you were with the whale at the very end. Can you walk us through that when she beached herself the first time?
Yeah, I can. My students, Ashley Donnell and Amanda and Allison, were observing her behavior, and it started to deteriorate really quickly. She started to list on her side and go in small circles, and her respiration rate got really short, like 10 to 20 seconds. And that was extremely different than her behavior had been for the whole time she was in the river. So we started monitoring her even more closely, and around 6:30, she stranded on a patch of river just about 200 meters downstream of the bridge. And she was, you know, on her stomach, and so her blowhole was exposed, and she continued this 10 to 30 second respiration rate and didn't look stressed, like she wasn't thrashing, but, you know, she looked like the... like she was resolved to this ending. And then, so we stayed with her throughout the night. Arnie Nova was one of the York Tribal Fisheries personnel who was driving the boat and helped us throughout. And he and I and Allison and Greg were on the boat, and we stayed with her throughout the night, and we'd anchor, you know, a distance away from her and just sort of be close in case there's anything we could do to assist and to sort of know where she was so that we could make a plan for the next day. Our hope, I know it's unrealistic, but you can't help but hope, that was that somehow she would just right herself and swim out of the river, but that wasn't to be the case. And so we were monitoring her throughout the night. She kind of drifted off the bar at high tide, but then she drifted back. And around 4:19 exactly, she took her last breath. And so we waited then, and I helped to organize the recovery team, which consisted of the Marine Mammal Center in Sausalito and Dennis Wood from Crescent City and other NIPS officials and mostly the tribe to sort of come together to sort of take the next step.
And what happened on the boat when she just didn't take that next breath?
I mean, there were some tears shed. It was a sad time. It was also just a sort of, I think, group realization that it was her time and that this was the end of the path that she had chosen in one way or another. And so that was the general sentiment. We waited with her, and it was an incredibly peaceful thing. The moon was almost full, and the river was quiet, and she didn't struggle. She just took her last breath. It was a peaceful ending to a very odd journey for her, I'm sure.
Was there any afterthought about, you know, maybe we could have tried harder to drive her back down out of the river?
You know, I think that between the tribe and NIMS and Remote Center and us, we'd considered every single thing. We'd done massive interventions, we'd done smaller interventions, and I think, and we had, you know, new things planned. In fact, we went up there today with different sounds to sort of use, and then we kind of, or yesterday, and we just obviously ended up having a different mission that day. But no, I think we tried pretty much everything we could, considering it's a, you know, almost 40-ton whale in a small river, and she wasn't a willing participant in the effort to get her out. And, you know, sometimes nature does take its course. For whatever reason, she was in the river, and for whatever reason, that's where she stayed.
Well, we want to talk about some of the lessons that she left for you guys. But before we do that, just the drives, you know, like they were playing killer whale sounds and they were banging pipes and doing the sort of things that you see happen when whales go up into the San Francisco Bay, you know, just flotillas of boats trying to annoy the whale out of where that whale is. And how did the whale resist? Well, did you like drive boats at it and it just didn't move? I mean, it sounds almost like chicken.
In fact, it's an odd thing because most of my work is done not trying to harass whales and trying to understand them and their normal behavior. And now our job was to try to encourage her to leave. And the idea about those techniques, even though some of them seemed extreme, was to encourage her to leave because making the river an unpleasant place. And, you know, honestly, a number of those things worked. They just worked for a very short time, and then she would just turn around and come back. She was quite stubborn persistent in remaining in the river. And we did try everything that has been tried before and some new things, but again, there's just nothing that had a lasting effect. And, you know, I wish we could have done something that could have taken her out, but with all of the best ideas from a number of different groups, there's just nothing that was either feasible or that was really had an effect on her. There was something in her that was meant to be in the river, and I'm not sure what that was.
Well, the whale certainly became an object of projection from humans. You know, somebody went out in the river with a violin and tried to serenade it. And people, you know, Yurok were saying, oh, you know, she's bringing a message. And, you know, there are just a lot of different angles on what she meant to people. But you spent a massive amount of time with her. Was she responsive to humans, or was she just tolerating you guys? I mean, we all saw photos of boats getting really, really close to her, and we know that nobody would want to hassle a whale unless the whale was okay with it in some sense. What was the whale's temperament?
You know, that's a challenging one, and you're right. Everyone had a different perspective, and I'm coming to understand and honor everyone's different connection with her. You know, from a scientific perspective, I don't think she her behavior didn't reflect sort of an affiliative nature. She didn't sort of seem to go towards those things in a physical way. Who knows about sort of any spiritual connection, but for her in the river, when people were close, even though sometimes she stayed near, oftentimes she would move away. And I think that was a stressful thing for her to have people so close and, you know, doing a number of different things. Did she benefit in some other form? I can't really address that. But, you know, people did have different connections with her, and I'm not sure and never can tell what her connection was with them.
What was your connection with her?
Oh, my. You know, I'm just kind of processing that still today. You know, it's just been a day since she's gone. But, you know, much of my summer has been there, and much of my student summer has been on the river monitoring her and watching her. And I don't know if you've had the pleasure of watching a single animal for a long period of time, but you do get a certain connection with them, and you do get a certain understanding with individuals. And, you know, mostly I study whales offshore, and there's numbers of them, and I understand gray whales fairly well, but not a single gray whale, you know. So I came to know her and her behaviors fairly well, and I kept, as I probably shouldn't have, I kept hoping that her behavior would shift and she would do what we would like her to do and what would enable her to survive, which is leave, and she never did.
We're, again, speaking with Professor Dawn Goley from Humboldt State. She was with the whale a whole lot, and her students were up there as well. It seemed like it caught a lot of people off guard. You know, we woke up one morning to see, you know, the whale died. Was it a surprise to you guys when she beached herself that previous evening?
Well, you know, it wasn't a surprise that something was terribly different, you know. And again, this is our one whale that we've ever observed in a river. And so we had no idea what normal was at any period of time, but we had an idea what her normal was. And so when her normal took such a drastic turn, we realized something was up. And it was surprising to me that it happened so fast. I mean, even the day before, she was doing her what we consider normal behaviors around the bridge, her looping behavior, her turning behavior. But so it's surprising to me that she turned so quickly, went downhill so quickly, and that, you know, within a day, we went up with, just like I said, equipment to sort of encourage her down the river, gray whale sounds. We had all these different plans, and that equipment stayed in the car, and it turned into a recovery effort. And so I wasn't prepared in that way, but in retrospect, that's pretty much the end game for a whale that's in a river that won't leave. They just aren't adapted to life in fresh water, and that was going to be the outcome unless she would leave on her own, or if we could find a way to convince her to leave.
Well, you talk about this looping behavior, you know, and I went up, like I said, I went and watched it, and it seemed fairly clear that, you know, she would go up the river, flip a U-turn, go back down the river, kind of in the same spot repeatedly. Was this happening? Was it like symmetric, you know, like mechanical, you know, the same pattern over and over and over again that you observed?
It was fairly stereotypical, you know, but that little stereotypical looping pattern would change from a little bit downriver, a little bit upriver, above the bridge, below the bridge, but it was fairly small. But, you know, we did a bunch of depth profiling and prey sampling. We were going from all levels with the tribe and with colleagues at HSU to sort of figure out why she's there, and if we could figure out why she was there, we were thinking we could figure out how to make her leave. I mean, we were utterly engaged in this, and these looping behaviors were typically around areas of the river that were deeper, you know. So there were channels that were scoured out as the river had a higher flow, and she was typically staying in those channels. She didn't visit the shallow water, but, you know, as the season progressed, the channels got lower, and that was part of our concern, too. But most of her stereotypical behavior was in a place in the river that made a lot of sense.
Now, in the wild, is this how whales typically live out their, you know, final 24 hours?
You know, I think we may be the first people that have ever witnessed a wild whale dying. I mean, you see them, I guess that's not true. Some stranding people have watched that too, but often in different circumstances. This was, you know, as close to a natural death as we could see. And I had, honestly, I had fears about that. I envisioned sort of a drowning, struggling, thrashing whale, and it was one of the more peaceful passings I've had the privilege to be a part of.
Well, what are the scientific takeaways for this, Dawn Goley?
You know, the scientific takeaways, I must say, are mostly about how to deal with whales in rivers. You know, and again, we've had a small sample size of them, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see that continuing, you know, in some low level. And so, you know, we've worked incredibly well with the tribe and NIMS and Roma Center and local community members. And so I think we've learned a lot about the process of how to do this. And we've made some mistakes. We've come up with some great new ideas. And I think we'll be even better prepared the next time a whale comes in the river.
Are any of those great new ideas something a layperson would understand?
I don't know. I don't know if this layperson understands all of them, but I mean, a lot of the new ideas came from just really having great relationships and cooperation and collaboration with all the parties, and this was an amazing example of that. Some techniques we used, I think, are sort of shifting a little bit to being even more precise and more targeted, and the opportunity that my students and I had to really monitor behavior almost every day was really critical in making decisions. And so, you know, most people think that these things are run by only sort of policymakers and scientists. But, you know, my student scientists played a critical role in this and gave up much of their summer to contribute to this effort. And, you know, they learned a lot, and I learned a lot, not only about this whale, but about the Yurok tribe and the culture and SNPs and veterinary science. And, you know, it broadened all of our horizons. And maybe that's one of the gifts that the whale left with us and the local community is that idea about cooperation and openness and ability to learn from each other.
Well, before we wrap this up, I just want to thank you so much for your perspective on it. And the final question I have is about the calf. You got a lot of photos of the calf. Is there any chance that it will be cataloged and we will see the calf come back down south on a future migration?
That is my dearest hope, but that she doesn't return to the river. No, we have cataloged the calf, and I call her, I'm not sure of the gender, actually, but we have cataloged the calf, and we continue to do our offshore surveys as part of our work with the Marine Mammal Education Research Program at HSU, and so we've been looking for her ever since, and there are gray whales out there, but it hasn't been seen again offshore. So hopefully another colleague from Oregon or Washington or Kodiak even will find that whale, and we're definitely all on the lookout for it.
Well, Professor Don Goley from Humboldt State University, I can imagine that this will stay with you and your students for a really, really long time. And thank you for talking to us today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
All right. That is HSU's Don Goley. That was awesome. Thank you again, Don Goley. All right. Let's play some music. This is KHUM Radio Without the Rules.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out KHUM.com or search KHUM in iTunes.